All right, welcome to Tango TV, everyone. This is Tango speaking, and today I'm interviewing.
This is Kaiser. Been around the Doom community for a while. Made some levels as well as the Doom 64 project.
Yeah, so Kaiser's got quite an extensive list of things he's done, if somehow you're not familiar with him. So let's just go ahead and then start at the beginning. So just take a few minutes. Start around the time you start playing Doom, I guess, or when you discover the community, and then you can keep going until now, essentially, if that's what you want to do. So go for it.
Back then I never really actually owned a PC, so I've actually first heard about Doom when I was reading a Game Pro magazine that mentioned about Doom, and I thought that it was like the greatest thing I've ever saw. But during that time I didn't have a PC, so the first time I actually got to play Doom was for the Super Nintendo. Yeah, and that was when I first actually experienced the Doom. So once the PlayStation came out, that's when I was first exposed to Ultimate Doom and Doom 2.
Wait,
And
wait. So by this point, or okay, actually, never mind. Keep going. I'll ask that in a minute. Go ahead.
oh,
Go ahead.
okay. Well, when I started playing the Doom for the PlayStation, I thought it was like the greatest game I have ever played. I was just very blown away by the levels. I thought the levels at the time it was just very, very complex, and this is just it was just great. And then after that, I began playing Final Doom for the PlayStation, and I was just so sucked into the game. And after that, that's when I've heard about Doom 64, and I was also really excited for that. Surprisingly, Doom 64 was actually the only Doom game that I have never actually owned. Yeah, I actually had to rent it at Blockbuster, but yeah, surprisingly, I never actually got to own it.
So, but by this point, you hadn't even played Doom on a PC yet. So all your experience was with console Doom. So I guess that would kind of explain your affinity with Doom 64, which we can still see today.
Yeah, it was I don't know why, but just the look of Doom 64, I just became obsessed with it. I wanted to know, what made it tick. I mean, what made it work? And it was so different from the other Doom games.
And at this point, did you have any interest in actually making levels yourself? I've said this before, but a lot of mappers have these kind of interests with other games, and then they discover Doom, and they go, "Wow, this is so great because I have so much freedom and I can do all these things, and I really want to build levels for Doom." So was it like that for you?
Well, it sort of. I was actually pretty fascinated with level design from a pretty early age. I can't remember when, but I knew that back sometime in elementary, I used to draw levels based on Mega Man, and yeah, I would just come up with some bunch of crazy, just a bunch of crazy traps with a bunch of spikes and a bunch of other things, and I was also fascinated with mazes and other side scroller levels. But yeah, I was very fascinated with level design, and when I was at a bookstore one time, and I saw a book on how to make custom levels for Duke Nukem, and I was just blown away, like, wow, you can actually make homebrew levels at home, without any, you don't even have to like work for a company. You can just make levels at home, and I thought, I was just so pumped up for that. But I didn't have a PC, so yeah.
Okay, so you had experience with Doom on the SNES, you had PlayStation Doom, N64 Doom. So what year are we in right now that you still haven't gotten to a PC yet, but you've kind of discovered that level building actually can happen at someone's own computer?
I actually discovered it sometime I think sometime during the PlayStation years, I was at a bookstore sometime back in 96, I think. That was when I first saw a book on Duke Nukem, and eventually I saw a strategy guide on the PC version of Doom, and I was looking at the maps, and I was like, wait a minute, these levels look nothing like the levels on the PlayStation. Holy crap, one of the levels is actually larger than the one on the PlayStation. What gives? And then I saw, like, wait a minute, Wolfenstein. What the heck is Wolfenstein? Because back then I didn't know what Wolfenstein was, and I was like, wait a minute, these are a bunch of levels I have never seen before.
Right.
And at the back of the guide, there was like a floppy disk that included a DCK and some instructions on how to make a level. And I was like, wait a minute, you can actually make a Doom level. This is so awesome. And then I remember sometime after that, I used to draw a bunch of like auto map overlays of custom levels on paper during school. Right. And I was so obsessed with making levels, and I just wished I had a computer to make one. So, and then 98 rolled around, and my parents actually bought a compact PC. And first thing I did was, I went to Best Buy, and I wanted to see if they still had Doom, and I found the Depths of Doom trilogy, which I bought, and it also included Doom 2, Ultimate Doom, and Maximum Doom, and I installed all of them, and I was just playing the levels that were different from the consoles, and I was just playing through them. I was playing through Doom all over again, and it was just a completely different experience.
So by this point, you were already, sounds like you were really familiar with Doom as far as all the console versions go, because you knew enough to know that all the levels were different on the consoles and that some levels were bigger than the other levels. Okay, so what you said, this is 98 right now?
Yeah. Well, I guess sometime after that, I wanted to make levels for Doom, but at that time, I had no knowledge of how to work the computer just yet, and I was just trying to find something. I mean, back then, you know, trying to search for something on the internet was very atrocious and frustrating. So I came across this one called Hellmaker, but it was for the Mac, and I thought, you know, for the longest time, I tried to install it and trying to get it to work, but I just wasn't aware that it was meant for a different operating system. and then I saw this website called it was for Quake, but there was a level editor called Cool, mm-hmm. and I went and installed that, and surprisingly enough, I was actually making a level for Quake instead of Doom. But I never really got anywhere with it. I tried to make something, but I just couldn't understand it. I had a hard time just grasping the concept of brushes. I didn't even knew what brushes were. But
I've been there.
Yeah, and I think a year later, I came across this is 99 now, and I came across a level editor called Deep Sea, and It was for Windows. It had a Windows interface, and it was nice because, you know, some of the other editors that I was coming across, it would only run in DOS, and, you know, for me, I did not know what the heck DOS was, and I had no experience with it. But then here's Deep Sea with a Windows interface and all that, and I went and downloaded the shareware version, and I started making a very a small test level, and when I first made that level was just way out of proportion. I was like making rooms that were like, I don't know, like 10,000 units wide. But that level actually ended up becoming one of the secret levels in my first megawad.
And which megawad was that?
I believe it was called DSV.
Okay, that was one of the DSVs. Okay.
Yeah, that was I actually released that one back in 2000, but that megawad contained some of the very first levels that I made. So one of the secret, I think map 31 was the very first level I have ever made, and map 23 was the second level that I've ever made.
I'm just curious, how old were you at the time when you actually started getting into Doom level design? Because you can definitely tell when someone's like, you know, like early high school age and they start making their first levels versus someone that's an adult and they start making their first level.
Actually, I cannot remember how old I was at the time. I knew I was in high school when I first started making levels for Doom, I right. think. I'm not sure. I think I was like 16 or 17. I can't really remember. Maybe 18. Okay. I'm not sure.
But, I mean, the fact that you were able to actually later put these maps, put these first two maps into something that you actually released to the community, I think says something. Because, I mean, it sounds like you didn't really have any major problems with the editor itself at this point. A lot can go wrong with, I mean, if you don't understand the interface, you don't understand how sectors work and line depths work, then you get huge open rooms and you can clip through everything. But it sounds like you didn't really have that problem at the start, did you?
Actually, the first level that I did had a lot of clipping problems and a lot of visplane overflows, which I did not know what the heck was going on. I didn't really understand the whole concept. And it actually took me a long time to understand. It took me not too long to understand sectors and line depths, but side depths was what really got me, especially since... Since I didn't know what unclosed sectors were, and I had a hard time trying to understand why this door wouldn't open, which I had the front side facing the opposite way.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people starting out, doors are a major mystery. You can never figure out why the door won't just open.
Yeah, and there was like this one room where all the line dust were all facing the opposite way.
Oh yeah. That could be a problem. Oh, sorry, no, go ahead. Keep going.
I'm sorry. Well, I was going to say, eventually, I've caught on and learned, you know, during line depth drawing to draw in a clockwise instead of counterclockwise, which I was doing before.
Uh huh.
Which was like causing a lot of stuff to break.
Now, do you, when you still make maps nowadays, if you ever do, what do you still use Deep Sea? Are you one of the 10 people in the community that still uses Deep Sea over Doom Builder?
I love Deep Sea. I love it so much, but it just, for some reason, Windows 7 just doesn't like it at all. So I use Doom Builder, but at the same time, it takes a while for me to get used to Doom Builder, but because, you know, Deep Sea had a lot of, color code for line depths, like if it's flagged invisible, then it would be orange, or, you know, if it was blocking monsters, it would be colored dark red, but Doom Builder didn't have all that, so I actually had to customize Doom Builder myself to support different colors.
Right.
So I kind of had to tweak Doom Builder myself to make it feel kind of like Deep Sea.
Okay, now, so if Windows 7 did have support for Deep Sea, is that what you would be using then?
I would, but since using Doom Builder, I did kind of grown accustomed to its controls, a problem in Deep Sea, where the only way to move around was to use the key arrows. Oh. But while in Doom Builder, you can just hold down spacebar and drag your mouse and, you know, to pen the level, which is a really nice feature.
Right. Okay, so you haven't really used anything else in between that? It was either... It's always been either Deep Sea or Doom Builder.
I did try to jump into Death, but I just had such a hard time trying to get used to the controls, and I just didn't like it.
Okay, yeah, it's amazing how much of a difference interface really makes. I mean, like, you can think that, oh, you know how to build a Doom level, and you can make a level this size and this much time, but when you switch editors like that and you're faced with a new interface and new controls that you're not really familiar with, it makes a really big difference. And I think nowadays, certainly with Doom Builder and how so much of it is automatic and the user doesn't have to worry about these things, we're kind of spoiled, I guess, in a way, you could say.
Sort of.
But, I mean, I'm not as familiar with the old editor, so maybe I'm full of shit.
The nice thing about Doom Builder is it's very fluid in progress. Like the controls are set up in ways where you can just quickly slap stuff together very quickly and iterate on it. While in Deep Sea, it kind of took a while to get some stuff up and going. Like trying to move around or trying to create some line devs. While in Doom Builder, you can just quickly draw some stuff and just it had enough shortcut keys to quickly do things. And it's what's really great about that editor is just you can just. It's just access of different control schemes to quickly build stuff and quickly iterate on it.
Now, Deep Sea doesn't have a 3D mode, correct? I think Doom Builder and Slade are the only ones that do that.
It has a semi 3D mode. Not quite, but it's sort of can't really explain it. It does have it, but it's very. I guess it's very useless, but it also allows you to, it also has allows you to render the whole level in wireframe, which was actually pretty nice.
Oh, okay.
But, even that, that can barely run on Windows 7, so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, so going back a little bit, so you're just messing around with Deep Sea. How long did it take you till you got to a point that you felt really comfortable with the editor and you could essentially make in the editor what you were thinking in your head?
I don't fully understand that question.
I mean, like, how long did it take you to become familiar enough with the editor that you could essentially do anything that you wanted to do with it? Until you got to a point where you were really comfortable making levels and you could just churn them out like you obviously did years ago.
Actually, I didn't really consider that DSV started like right as soon as I started making my first level. I just, once I finished a level, I just, saved it and moved on to another level. And I just kept making levels left and right. And, roughly around a year, I had like 32 levels and I decided, I'm just going to turn this into a megawad. And, and then after that, it took a while for me to figure out how to release it, but that's when I discovered Doomworld back in 99, and I didn't fully understood like how to upload to CD-ROM.com because I didn't understood the concept of using FTP. So I came across Team TNT's website, and they had a small section where they hosted user wads, but they said that they couldn't host it because I wasn't using their return resources. So I actually spent like another month just retexturing some of the stuff in my levels using their resource. And I eventually replaced one of the levels with a level that actually made use of all the resources. I once I was done, I resubmitted, and it was hosted.
So they wouldn't host something unless you used their resources.
Yeah.
All right. So within what you said, the span of like a year, you had 32 levels completed.
Yep. I was going to say most of them I kind of cheated because if you look at some of the levels in DSV, they resemble very, very similar to Doom 64. Because some of the levels I was just drawing a blank, and I had a strategy guide of Doom 64 from a while back, and I would just look at the automap overlays and just use ideas based on that.
Okay, I mean, if you can do it well enough, that's really not a bad way to do it, even nowadays. But now I'm wondering, did the idea of making a megawad, of making 32 maps, did you ever feel pressured? Because, I myself have tried. I'm like, oh, I'm going to sit down and make this many maps a week, and then by this much time I'll have 32 maps done. Did you ever feel the pressure to make a certain number of maps and make them be of a certain quality?
Not really. I was just doing whatever I felt like. I wasn't trying to push 32 levels. I was just felt like making levels.
You just having fun.
Yeah, and another thing, I really wanted to make it feel like this is a whole new Doom campaign. So I wanted to try to do 32 levels, and then after that, play through it and make it feel like, you know, I'm playing like a whole new set of you know, Doom levels.
Okay. Okay.
It was, mostly the making the make when I was when I decided to make a Megawatt, it was mostly inspired by Maximum Doom from. When I first played Maximum Doom in the PlayStation version of Final Doom, I was very impressed by some of those levels, and when I was playing it again on the PC, I thought, you know, it would be really cool to just make like my own set of master levels, except, you know, they were amateur.
Okay.
But I was not pressured at all. I was just creating levels and just, you know, just having fun with it. I really did not like the concept of you create a custom level and then when you beat it, you start the next level, you know, start like one of the stock Doom levels. And
I was like,
yeah. And it's like, I basically wanted everything to be custom, because I did not want to finish a custom level and then start the next level in Doom 2 again. I wanted to replace everything.
Okay. So it sort of ruined the experience for you when you finished playing your own level and then it started up and you were at Under Halls again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I got so tired of that. So I wanted to, you know, completely replace all the maps.
That's interesting. I don't think I've heard that motive before, but if that's what motivated you, that's awesome.
Yeah, I have pretty weird motivations.
Well, I guess I could talk about, there's one level of yours in particular. I think it's on the archives, and I think it's Kaiser 12.
That one.
It's, what is that, like electro nickel plate facility or something?
Yeah, something like that. It's kind of funny because the title of that map was actually based on what I was doing at work at the time. During 2003 and 2004, I was working like 12-hour night shifts at Texas Instruments. And I was basically working with that. And during those times, I think that was when I was the most active when making levels, because, you know, I was pretty much, whenever I was off, I was pretty much awake during the night. So I had nothing better to do, but just make levels constantly. And yeah, that level is the title of that level was actually based on what I actually did at work.
I think I've gone through and played, I don't know how many maps are in the Kaiser series on the archives, but I think I've played just about every single one of them at some point.
I think there's roughly 24 plus,
yeah.
plus two that were for Doom 64, unreleased, but yeah, I think it was like 24.
Okay. Well, that one, that's the one I remember after years of playing all the Kaiser, maps. And that's even something that I've opened up recently in Doom Builder and looked at it and tried to emulate in my own stuff. But so it sounds like that was sort of your prime time as far as Doom editing goes. You worked at Texas Instruments or whatever, and then you came home and you made Doom levels.
Yeah, pretty much. I would say 2002 through 2004 was when I was extremely active. I know that, like, right after I finished DSV-4, I started contributing some levels for the first community chest.
Oh, okay.
And I think once I contributed those levels, that was when I got really serious with Doom mapping.
Okay, so what happened exactly when you sort of, when your enthusiasm dropped and you stopped producing as many maps?
Well, whenever I get burnt out, I would actually make a level for another game.
Oh, I don't know if that even really counts as a burnout,
Yeah, I actually made a level or two for Serious Sam and Quake 2, and I think I made some stuff for the first Unreal tournament, but those maps are long gone. I don't think I have them anymore.
No. So were you ever involved in those communities?
Not as much. I would just make something and then upload it to what was it? I think Planet Unreal had their own like server where you can upload levels, and I'll just upload it to there and that'd be it. I barely participated in the forums or anything like that.
Oh, okay. So you never involved in any other community really as much as you were in the Doom community?
No. Well, I was, aside from Doom World, I was pretty active in the Quake 3 World community, but that didn't go out. I mean, that didn't work out as well.
Oh, okay. You mean, I take it you mean active as far as mapping goes?
Mapping and, you know, just, like, reputation.
Okay. Did you, this makes me wonder, did you ever, or have you ever gotten into the competitive aspect of Doom or even Quake or Arena, Unreal or anything like that? Or have you just sort of always been a mapper?
I've actually liked making stuff for games rather than playing it. I'm not a very competitive person. I really hate competition, but I do really enjoy like co-op games or
similar
games.
Yeah.
So usually when I make a level, I usually try to make it. I try to focus more on the single player and co-op aspects. Like I know that some of the later Kaiser WADs were designed for co-op, but unfortunately, I never bothered testing them. And I guess that's like one of the drawbacks that, I mean, looking back now, is that, you know, I never really tested my stuff fully. I just make it and just call it done after I'm finished.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's certainly something. I think your attitude is definitely respectable. I mean, it sounds like you were just having a good time making maps and you didn't really care about anything else.
Yeah, that's actually some of the things that I kind of regret is, like, I mean, I love just building stuff, just making stuff very complicated and just making stuff that where you can just explore. But the big problem with some of the later Kaiser levels is that they were, in terms of gameplay, they were untested and they were just too freaking large. like 30 minutes large. That's, you know, that's one of the things that I regretted. I should have just kept it like, I should have kept them small and compact.
So you're not really a fan of larger works like that?
It really depends. If the level is clear, like where you need to go, then yeah, I wouldn't mind. But I knew that some of my levels required you to just go all over the place in search of keys, and a lot of stuff was just, it kind of seemed unfair, like no, like trying to know where to go.
Okay. Now at this point, were you really did you get feedback from anyone else in the community? Did you? You know, would you like make something and then say, oh, hey, such and such, let me send you my map, and then you get feedback, and then you change your map, and then you release it? Or did you just keep churning them out, not really caring about anything else?
I never I did like listen to feedback. I mean, strangely enough, the majority of the feedback that I get from my maps were from New Doom.
Oh,
because,
okay.
Yeah, because they seem to be, I mean, back then they seemed to be more, I guess, vocal on giving out feedback. I know that for a while I wasn't as active in Doom World for some reason, but I was more active at New Doom at some point. But I would get some feedback on some of the maps, but some of the stuff I would ignore because I really didn't want to, like, having to redo something that took me forever to do, and being lazy as I am, I just do some minor tweaks around it and just call it done.
Okay. I mean, like I said, though, that's That's certainly something I admire that you were able to just keep going. It's very seems very modest of you.
But yeah, nowadays I'm definitely more I'm a lot more focused on getting feedback since since now I'm doing this professionally. I definitely rely on feedback a lot.
Well, since you do bring up that you're doing that professionally now, would you like to take a moment to just sort of talk about how you got into the industry and what your experience has been like? I mean, if you're trying to avoid this subject for fear of getting fired or something like that, then...
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, then if you want to go ahead and just tell us a little bit about how you got involved and what kind of things you're doing, then I'm sure people would love to hear that.
I actually got into it by accident. I was studying for IT, and at the time back in 2006, I was working at a help desk company, and sometime in late December, no one ever told me, but then at the very last minute, they said that my contract was up, and I was immediately fired. So I was pretty desperate trying to find some work, and by accident I came across this this company called TimeGate, which was just a few miles away from where I used to work, and just for shits and giggles I just applied, and I focused on looking for other work, but then they contacted me back.
Yeah.
Asking if I had any portfolio or anything to show. So I went and showed them a couple of screenshots from some of the levels that I did for Dree as well as Doom. And they contacted me again asking if I could come aboard. But see, it was actually perfect timing because this was right after they finished the first expansion for Fear, and I think three of their level designers quit, and they were in need of more level designers. So I was kind of fortunate to be there when they really needed them.
Yeah. I think because that's about the time I started hanging out in Doom IRC chats, and I think I remember you talking about this kind of thing. I can't remember anything specific, but I do remember you talking about you and your level design for the Fear expansion pack. I was actually, I would sometimes try and brag to my friends that, oh yeah, I talked to this guy online who made a level for that expansion pack you see over there on the shelves at Target.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, I do not bring it up as, I really don't bring it up that much. In fact, I actually try to avoid bringing it up unless they ask me what I do for a living. But mm-hmm. I'm really the kind of person that doesn't like to try to get attention. I basically just see it as a job, except it's something that I'm very comfortable doing and something that I enjoy doing. But as far as letting everyone know what I do, I just don't do that.
Do you enjoy it as much as you did with Doom in the early days?
Making levels for Fear was a blast. I really loved how the levels were constructed. I mean, basically, we level designers had full control over everything, including lighting, geometry, and even audio placement. And during that time, we were just like managing ourselves. We were basically in charge of how the game played out. But I definitely enjoyed it, and even the gameplay. The gameplay was one of the greatest things that I've enjoyed doing, because AI was extremely smart, and you can just do them. I mean, basically, you can have them do so many cool things.
Yeah.
So, but after that, I think like sometime after that, that was when the Xbox 360 and all the other new consoles came into the market, and that was sometime after that. That was when games started. It's they started changing like very drastically, like the way games are played nowadays. The you know, franchises change, and a bunch of other, you know, just a bunch of other standards were changing as well, including the way games are being developed nowadays. So now it seems like, you know, since levels are becoming so complicated now, you usually have to have, you know, like four or five people working on one level at a time. And even now, you know, the level designer is no longer responsible for doing like everything now. It's like, you know, now you have someone dedicated for lighting, you have someone dedicated to making the level look pretty, and then you have someone dedicated for scripting, and, you know, you have another guy dedicated to just making it fun. So usually nowadays I'm just focusing on just doing the initial layout and just doing gameplay, but I'm kind of not as involved with everything else now. So, you know, because, you know, you have to have a dedicated artist to you know, to do the lighting and stuff like that.
So it sounds like you've got a lot less freedom nowadays with the way things are going than you did even back when you started in the industry a few years ago.
Sort of. We still get to like dictate our vision of the level. We still get to, like, you know, communicate, like, this is how we want it to look like. But, you know, but of course, you know, the lead artist still has, you know, they still have say, like, you know, no, we need this level to match with the rest of the style of the other environments. But it's not really a big deal. I still get to, I'm still responsible for just making the level fun and, like dictating the actual, layout of the level.
So it sounds like you've never really actually had a problem with the amount of freedom that you've been able to have.
We still have freedom. It's just, in terms of, like visuals, that's something that we don't have as much.
Okay. Now, I'm curious, could you describe like a typical day of you going into work and working on a level? How does that work?
It kind of depends. I guess during pre-production, we just prototype a bunch of levels. We don't even make the level look pretty. We just prototype some levels just to get the layout in, just to get the feel of how it works. And you know, it's just constant testing, a lot of feedback. And if one of the levels does pass, then we send it off to the art team to make the level look pretty, and then they you know, they give it back to us, and, you know, we do some more tweaks. But that's usually how it's like during pre-production. It's like I come in, I read my emails, you know, if anyone has decided, you know, this is what we're going to do, you know, any like gameplay discussions or stuff like that. But during actual production, then it's like, you know, I come in, I resume work on a level, you know, just try to get some of the stuff done by a certain day, or, you know, the level has to be playable from start to finish by the certain day. And then afterwards, once we get closer to shipping, it's mostly, you know, you come in, you go to your, I guess you go to our website. We read a list of the bugs reported by QA, and we just spend the majority of the day just fixing stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but, well, actually, you bring up the issue of deadlines. Has that ever really been a problem with you? I mean, has that been a problem for you? Have you ever felt especially rushed, or do things usually come together pretty smoothly?
Yeah, sometimes I am pressured, but surprisingly, whenever I am pressured, I actually do the best work. It seems like I do a better job when I'm rushed rather than when I'm taking my time with something.
Right.
Because whenever I take my time with something, I tend to put in a lot of effort into something that's not really important, and that's kind of where a level will fall apart, is when I'm kind of just putting too much thought into something. But it's like when I'm kind of rushed, I kind of just focus on the most important things, get it done pretty quickly, and then move on. And surprisingly, that actually turns out a lot better than when I would just take my time with something.
Well, I mean, that certainly makes sense, because I know a lot of people in the Doom community, at least, they have a lot more success trying to speed map than they do when they sit down and, you know, try and take it a room at a time, because it is very easy to get distracted by little things. You'll start trying to carve out this beautiful mountain landscape when it doesn't actually affect the gameplay whatsoever. So I could certainly see why the pressure would help you get things done in a good way.
Yeah, it is a good way, actually, and it has helped out a lot in the past.
Okay. Now, what other games have you worked on so far? I know you did one of the Fear expansion packs, Section 8? You worked on Section 8, didn't you?
Yeah, Section 8 and the sequel. The sequel was more of a download title, but yeah, I mean, I only did two levels for the first Section 8, and I did like the final level in the sequel in the campaign. But those, and also I was also responsible in designing the final boss in the sequel. But I did enjoy just designing the levels, because I did have a little bit of freedom in doing what I want, especially when designing the final boss. I basically came up with whatever that would work within a reasonable amount of time. I guess the only constraint that I had was, you know, time, because, you know, we were scheduled to get the game done within like 8 months, I think. And you know, I had to come up with ways for this final boss that would make use of existing mechanics. So I kind of worked around it, and in the end, the final boss worked out pretty well.
I can't say I've actually played the game.
But yeah, after the Section 8 sequel, we were contracted with Gearbox to help them finish one of their games, which was Aliens Colonial Marines. We were contracted to help them out, and I think I was in charge of three maps, but one of them later got taken over by Gearbox. But I went and continued working on these two maps, and eventually one of them was also sent back to Gearbox for them to finish. But I was still responsible in getting this one level done from start to finish.
So when the games you work on are eventually finished and they get all packaged up and released in the stores, do you get yourself a copy and then just sit down and play the whole thing and marvel at all the levels you made?
The only time I received a free copy was during the Fear expansion and the first Section 8, but I received a free Steam key for the Section 8 sequel. But I don't open or play I don't play my free copies unless except for the downloadable sequel. But I still have my retail copy of Fear and in the first Section 8 game, but I haven't opened them.
So you don't have you actually played all of these levels that you made in the final completed game then?
Well, since I play test the game constantly, usually I don't play the actual retail or the actual shipped game, because I haven't played everything so many times. You know, you just get so used to the game. It's like, you know, by the time you do want to play the actual shipped game, it's like you're just burnt out from it. But I know for a fact for the Aliens game, I know I'm kind of anticipated to start playing through, since I haven't really been heavily involved with the other levels besides besides the second mission. But yeah, that's probably going to be the first time I'll be playing through a game that I worked on from start to finish.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I was also wondering, I'd like to hear from someone who has who's in the industry and who has perhaps a better perspective on this. I'm sure you've seen, there's a popular image, especially among us in the Doom community, that has a layout of, I don't know what map it is. It's a Doom map, I'm pretty sure. And it says, you know, like, FPS level design, 1994 or something. And then next to it, it's got a picture of, it's an auto map layout. And it's just like two hallways next to each other or something. And it says, you know, like Call of Duty 2008 or something like that.
It is a trend in modern games, but it's mostly because that, you know, games are trying to aim for the mass market, which they just want to sit down, play the game, and be done with it after that. So it's like, you know, we don't want to like waste their time, you know, for them trying to know, you know, trying to explore and find out what to do. But, you know, I know that some of the main, like some of the lead designers at Gearbox, they still wanted some exploration. So we do try to, add some places where you can like explore into a side room and find some additional pickups while still while still allowing the user to maintain their main path. It's just, you know, it's still linear, but at least you're given some options to navigate through. But yeah, I mean, very linear level design is still a pet peeve of mine. But whenever, you know, whenever I am asked to make the level linear, I do try to at least give the user some options when they're at, like, whatever, if it's a side room or some minor little space that they can just explore for a brief moment. But yeah, I mean, long hallways with nothing to look at is definitely, you know, it's definitely pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always try to find like some ways to break things up to make it look interesting, or, you know, give the user a reason to look towards this way and explore real quick.
Right. Oh, well, that's good. I mean, certainly few games nowadays are going to have, or a few FPS games at least, are going to have as much exploration as you could expect in a Doom level. But it sounds like you haven't had too many terrible experiences with linearity in that aspect.
Yeah, so far for the games that I've worked on so far, it hasn't been that bad. I mean, it still needs to be linear, but with Fear and Aliens, I've managed to come up with some neat ways to make the level seem like, you know, there's like multiple paths, but it's still fixed on the main critical path, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, definitely.
But yeah, games like Call of Duty, yeah, they is definitely targeted towards, you know, towards your everyday Joe. So it's like, you know, they're not even going to bother giving them options to explore. So yeah, those kind of games are going to be as linear as possible.
Right. Well, while we're on the subject, do you play games with you play mainstream games like that?
I do not understand Call of Duty. I do not get the franchise. I've played the first Call of Duty Modern Warfare game, but I just did not understand it. I did not understand it at all. I just couldn't get into it. But for modern games, I'm definitely more I'm more attracted to co-op based games like Killing Floor and Serious Sam and Borderlands, of course, and uh-huh. and you know, those kind of games.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll take just a little bit more time for this interview, but one thing we haven't really discussed much is you and all your Doom 64 hacking. You already told us about where your interest in Doom 64 came from. But maybe you could talk a little bit about the origins of your Doom 64 source port and how that's going nowadays.
Well, sometime in 2002, I've learned about Doom open source and all that, and I was just it was really cool to see to see what you could do with the Doom code, and I've noticed that Doom 64 never actually had a real PC port, and it's just one of those things that just attracted to me because Doom 64 seemed so, I guess it seemed very mysterious and very, it's just like you just want to learn what made that game work, like what were the unique things that were that were designed just for Doom 64. And that was where the total conversion, that was when the TC started, sometime around 2003. I wanted to let users enjoy Doom 64 on the actual PC, and that was when the TC started. And
what was that called? Was that Absolution?
Absolution TC, yeah.
Okay.
In the end, it turned out pretty well. I wasn't too satisfied with it because at that time I had very limited knowledge of the technical aspects of Doom. I was, we didn't have a coder, so I had to basically modify Doomsday with the limited knowledge that I had. The only coding knowledge that I've actually gained was from Texan's scripting, and
right.
I try to do what I can to make it work, but sometime after the Fear expansion, when I was done with that, there was a long delay time in work, so I was kind of just sitting there twiddling my thumbs, and I don't know how, but I came across this source port called Doom 3D, which was hosted at Doomworld, and I was playing around with the source code and all that, and the source code was pretty simple. I mean, it was just basically DOS Doom with like hardware rendering features, and I started toying around with it, and what happened was I wanted to see if I could try to mimic the lighting style in Doom 64, and I managed to get that to work. And since then, that modified source port evolved into Doom 64 EX, which eventually all the Doom 3D stuff was eventually gutted out, and everything was replaced. Like the DirectX renderer was replaced with OpenGL, and just everything was just replaced. And and then sometime during the middle of development, I came across ways to better disassemble the N64 ROM, and I was able to gather a lot of stuff that I completely missed, and lots of stuff where I just did not understand how it worked. And it was good because there's a lot of little subtle things that they've done to the monsters. Like I know that the shotgun guy is a little bit more aggressive, and I know that the Lost Soul is more aggressive too. But there's a lot of little things that they've done that's important, to get right, or to get it done right.
Right. It's interesting that you talked about the late '90s. You really didn't have any knowledge as far as the technical aspect of Doom goes, but now, I mean, you got your whole Doom 64 port, and you have quite some experience under your belt, it seems.
Yeah, the only other coding experience other than Hexen's scripting system was SV Strife, which was a very poor attempt to reverse engineer Strife,
uh-huh.
And I guess you could say that was when I started to really learn to understand C programming was was during that time, and it's very horrible. I mean, the port is just god awful, but it was a really good learning experience. And same thing with Doom 64. I was basically just learning stuff as I go along, learning from my mistakes, learning that, you know, I shouldn't do it like this, and, you know, learning to better manage or organize the code. I mean, Doom 64 still has, like, I mean, Doom 64 EX still has, like, a lot of little flaws, but, you know, that's just something that I just have to learn off of. You know, once I come across all these issues, I learn off of it, and, you know, I adapt that for my next project.
Right. Now, all the stuff that you've learned making the Doom 64 port, do you ever get to really apply that at work?
I don't do as much programming, but lately I have been working a little bit with Unity's scripting system, but it's nothing like what I've learned in Doom 64. It's a completely different ballpark, because I'm basically working more with like modern features, like, you know, learning to blend animations, or learning to control the rendering matrix to work with mobile devices and stuff like that. So it's like the stuff that I learned from Doom 64. I mean, it does help, but a lot of the stuff is still pretty new.
Okay.
Yeah, the stuff that I'm working with is pretty, you know, is stuff that I haven't dealt with before.
All right. Well, we're nearing the end of the time for the interview, but well, is there anything you can think of that you wish we had talked about that you didn't get to talk about?
I cannot remember any. I don't have anything offhand right now.
All right. One more thing I wish I would have asked earlier. Out of all the Doom apps that you've made and released, or I guess not released, what stands out to you? Which one is, what do you hold most dear to you?
Oh, man. I do not know. There are so many maps that I've made. I really do not know. I guess the first thing that comes off, I guess the first thing that pops up in my mind is Kaiser underscore 12. I think the title of that map is The Attraction to All Things Certain. It's very large and very complicated, but I was very satisfied with just the complexity of the layout. I mean it's, you know, the majority of that level looks like there's not, you know, it just doesn't look like it's made up of a bunch of square rooms. It's like all the rooms have its own unique shape.
Yeah.
It plays out really well, but I know that if I were to play it now, I would probably get lost.
That is one thing I've always admired. And throughout the years, I have, like I said, I've opened your maps several times and looked at them for inspiration. But you definitely do a very good job keeping things fresh, at least from my perspective.
I'm sorry. I was going to say the majority of those levels, I mean, as I got more comfortable with making levels for Doom, the layouts were more inspired by John Anderson, Dr.
Stasher. Yeah.
Yeah, and I forgot, it was another guy from Team TNT. I cannot remember his name. I think it's Paul Schultz. I think he did some of the I can't remember which levels that he did. I'm sure they're up on Team TNT, but I was also heavily inspired by some of his levels as well.
Okay. All right. Well, Kaiser, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Any final words you'd like to say before we go?
I cannot think of anything right now. I guess to all who wants to, you know, wants to make levels, I say just do it. Just do what your instinct tells you, and, you know, just have passion in what you do.
All right. Wise words. Well, thank you, Kaiser. It's definitely been interesting to hear about all of your experiences. And I was particularly interested in what you had to say about being a professional level designer. So thank you again for joining us. Thank you to our listeners. And I guess we'll see you next time.